Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and I want to welcome you to a great Tuesday night here on Suspense Radio. I am your host, John Robb, and we got a great show for you tonight. Authors Les Roberts and Julie Kramer are going to be on joining us live, and I also want to announce that there will be no SmackDown tonight because we have a lot of great news to get into. So everyone, just sit back, relax, enjoy yourself, because 60 minutes of Suspense Radio begins right now.
Welcome to my nightmare. I think you're gonna like it. I think you're gonna feel you belong.
Welcome, everybody. Like I said, we got some great announcements coming up here. We want to let everybody know, first of all, again, thank you guys so much for taking the time out to join us tonight and, you know, listening from wherever you are listening to. Great show here. Les Roberts coming up here soon talking about his latest book and also the series that he has in the Milan Jankovic series. Hopefully I said that right, and I don't think I did, but anyway, Julie Kramer will then be on next at about 6:30, so you want to stick around for that too. What we have here is the magazine for our October-November issue is going to be, we just heard, it is printed. It will be in bookstores at the end of the month. The on-sale date is October 26th, so we want to make sure that you guys, as soon as we know exactly which bookstores it's going to be in, it's going to be all across the country. We are going to post that here on our Facebook page and in our newsletter, and we'll be sending it out. So you definitely want to make sure that you keep an eye out for that so you can go out and pick up all the copies and sell them out, because that way our next printing is going to be three times than what our first one already was, which actually went three times larger than what they thought it was going to do. So want to thank everybody for that. Also, what we have coming up here, if you guys missed, you know, Friday's show, you know, you missed a good one. Sebastian Stewart was on along with Sue Ann Jafarin, and they were talking about their books. Remember, you can always go back and listen to every radio show here on Suspense Radio by going to blogtalkradio.com, or you can go to suspensemagazine.com and click on Suspense Radio. We are heard on Netflix, through the Roku, on iTunes. We're now available on Zoom. We're on 75 other podcasting sites, so there's no reason for you not to be able to say that, you know, you cannot find us. Another announcement broadcast is we are going to be in BoucherCon on October 14th through the 17th. So the night of October the 15th, scheduled Allison Leota for that night on the radio show. We are not going to have a show on October the 15th. We are moving that to October the 19th. So on that date, you're going to hear Erica Spindler along with Allison Liotta for October the 19th. So make sure if you are listening, getting ready for that on the 15th, that you move your calendars. There will be no show on the 15th. So, you know, like I said, we have a lot of things that are going on, a lot of great guests coming up. I did mention last week that November the 30th, we will have Patricia Cornwell on, and that's going to be a great show. Also coming up here in October is going to be James Rollins with Iris Johansson, Steve Barry, like I said, Erica Spindler with Allison Liotta. We're going to have Spencer Quinn, T.L. Hines. So we have great guests always coming here for you along within the magazine. And we hear, you know, from you guys talking about, you know, who do you want to hear? Who have we maybe not mentioned or seen? Because there's so many great authors that write in the suspense, mystery, thriller, horror category. You know, we just can't catch them all. You're talking about almost 8,000 new authors worldwide that come out in this category. A lot of them are self-published, which is great because, you know, you can put those books out on ebook, which is what our good friend, you know, Scott Nicholson is doing at hauntedcomputer.com. Scott Nicholson has several books out, and, you know, he has a lot of great stuff that he has doing, so you want to check out hauntedcomputer.com. Hopefully you guys all ran and went to queenwriter.com. Because one of our great friends, Star Raina, is going, she has her own newsletter. She writes about many, many different things. Comes out quarterly. But if you hound her and you hound her, I'm sure she'll write it monthly. She's the author of Revenge, a book that Suspense Publishing has put out on ebook, along with another one of our great friends, Terry Ann Armstrong, who we published her book called Morning Menace. Both of those are available on Amazon and Smashwords. Scott Fadd, King of Nod, is available out there. So if you're looking for a place that you need to have marketed or you need to work on your book and you want it out there, Suspense Publishing was here to help you, and we will make sure that you get your book out to the masses to be able to be read, because traditional publishing going a little bit down and ebook publishing is extremely popular. We're talking about, hopefully, they said 30% of the sales of books coming in the year 2012 will be in ebook fashion. I mean, that is a massive amount considering that 3.1 billion books were sold alone last year. And to think 30% of those in the next couple of years are going to be ebooks, it's definitely something that you want to get of and you want to start checking out. So go get your e-readers. You know, I know that they're on sale now for $139. It's still expensive for some people. You know, I'm not saying that $139 is something that, you know, not, you know, cheap for me, but you can still get the books. When you look at it, if you're a hardcover person, you get the reader for $139. You can buy the book now for maybe $10. You're saving $15 a book. So after a while, it will pay for itself. I want to jump in here right now because our first guest is someone that is from the great state of Ohio, which is where, you know, which is where I'm from. He's from Cleveland, lived there just 20 years. We found out off the air. And seeing as we're from Columbus, you know, we're kind of from the same place here in Ohio in the Midwest. And his books are the Milan or Milan Yankovic series. It looks like Milan. That's why I say Milan, but I don't know if I'm right. Hello to Les Roberts, and Les, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight, and how are you doing?
I'm doing great, John. I'm glad to be here, but I've got to correct your pronunciation.
Yeah. You know, I told you off the air I was going to mess that one up.
My private eye's name is Milan Yakovic.
Milan
Yakovic. That is a Slovenian name.
And so your latest book in the Yakovic series is called The King of Holly Hop, and you said that came out in 2008.
That's right.
But between then, you have another book that is being released soon. Why don't you tell everybody about that book, because that's a standalone one, correct?
It is a standalone one. It's called Father Candy, and it is set in Youngstown, Ohio, in 1985. And everybody who knows anything about Youngstown back in the 80s knows that everybody in this book, and I mean everybody with a couple of exceptions, Everybody is Italian. And it's about the death of a priest. And that's about all I will tell you. But it's all about family, all about revenge, and it gets pretty violent. Actually, more violent than a lot of my books. I'm considered a hard-boiled writer, but I don't think I'm nearly as hard-boiled as a lot of people. Even somebody like Karen Slaughter, who's more hard-boiled than I've ever been. And I love her work, by the way. But I'm very excited about Father Candy. You know, I've written 14 of the Milan Jakovic books. I had stories that I wanted to tell, and I couldn't shoehorn them into the Cleveland Private Eye format. So I just did this one as a standalone.
And so this book is set in Youngstown, which is a little different from most of your books set in Cleveland. And, you know, poor Youngstown in that area has been decimated for so long. So was that something that you were looking at doing for a while, and you just said this is the time to do it?
No, actually, I had no intention of doing it, but a good friend of mine, he just retired as a police chief here in Northeast Ohio, and we go out to lunch, you know, once every couple of months, and one day he said, "You want to run over to Youngstown and have lunch?" And I said, "Well, okay." He said, "You know, I'm from there. I was born and raised there, and I was a cop there for many, many years." I said, "Oh, that'll be interesting." So we drove over there. It's only about an hour away from Cleveland, and he was driving me around town, and he was saying, "Oh, there was a shootout on this corner, and over there somebody's car blew up," and he started telling me stories of things that happened, and he started talking about this one story involving a priest, and it was amazing, John. The entire book clicked its way into my head right at that moment, and I said to him, "Can I write about this?" He said, "Change the names and don't mention mine."
Protect the innocent.
You betcha. And so I went right home, and I was think, working on King of the Hollyhock at the time. And I went right home, and I started, you know, writing Father Candy. And I kept going back to Youngstown to research and to talk to people. And as a matter of fact, I just had lunch yesterday with my police friend, and he's very excited, you know, that the book is coming out. And I said, "This takes place 25 years ago. Is anybody there going to be mad enough to come up here and kill me?" And he said, and I quote, "I don't think so."
I don't. And if they did, that would be a book for someone else to write.
You betcha. You betcha.
So, I mean, you know, you have to think, is that the first time that literally you're just sitting there eating lunch, hearing a story, and the book just kind of just pops into your head right like that?
No, it's happened a couple of times before. Usually somebody will talk to me and they'll mention something, or I'll read something in the paper, and I'll think, "Oh, you know, maybe I could do a book about that," and I make notes about it. And, of course, I have a huge notebook of notes, you know, on my computer. But the ones that I wind up writing are the ones that are eating a hole in my gut trying to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, I thought, "Oh, God, I have to do this, and I have to do it now while it's still fresh." So I made up this whole family. The priest is part of the family, you know, the oldest brother. And for me, it was a lot of fun.
Well, this is the King of the Holly Hop is your 14th book in
right.
the Jakovic novels, and that's, you know, and now you're doing number 15. So, you know, going back to your first one, Pepper Pike.
Yeah. Are you there? I can't hear you.
Paul.
I'm sorry. I missed you.
That's okay.
For a second.
Okay. Yeah, that, you know, happens sometimes. So what I was trying to say is, from Pepper Pike now all the way up to King of the Holly Hop, how have you evolved, you know, your character writing, you know, over 14 books now?
Well, he has evolved as I have evolved. When I started writing the books, he was around 40. And he has grown older, and guess what? So have I. And he is now a lot older and a lot more mellow. And in the book that I am in the process of completing, and I have maybe 8 pages to go to finish the book, he's not a well man. He's not violently sick, but he's had one confession too many, which he got in King of the Hollyhock. And he's having to be careful of what he eats, what he drinks, what he does. And he brings on a young guy named Kevin O'Banion, called K.O. And K.O. is a very, very angry young man. And although he is half Mylon's size, because Mylon is 6'3", 230, Kevin is one tough guy, and you don't want to mess with him. So, in effect, I'm writing about a new character along with my old friend character, Mylon. I think that Kevin, or K.O. as we call him, is going to stay around. I think that all of us, when we write a series of books over several years, the character evolves as we do. Look at Sharon McCone, you know, the Marcia Muller character. She's the same person, but she's so different from the 21 or 22 books before. And it's fascinating to watch her grow and change and fall in love and get married. And she gets a little bit less physically tough than she was when she was, say, 30 years old. So it's a lot of fun. And I often tell people always ask me about myself. Well, what are you like? Are you like Mylon? Are you really Mylon? This, that, and the other thing. And I always say, if you want to know about me, read my books.
Right.
I mean, I'm not a private eye. I don't beat people up. I haven't shot anybody for a long time. I have changed and he's changed. And it's fun to see that happen.
Well, speaking of getting to know you.
Yes.
A lot of people might not realize that you have wrote and or produced more than 2,500 half-hour network and syndicated TV shows, including The Lucy Show, Andy Griffith, and Man from U.N.C.L.E., just to name a few, which you have in your bio. Now,
right. The
transition to go from shows like that, which are maybe, you know, like Lucy Show, maybe more comedy, to Andy Griffith, which is some comedy and drama, to now go into suspense thrillers, a transition for you, and what kind of made you decide that you started wanting to write mysteries?
Well, it was interesting. I was living in Hollywood at the time, living in Los Angeles, and a young man came to me, a producer, and when I say producer, he had cards made up at Kinko's that say, I'm a producer. But anyway, he came to me, I knew him from way back, and he said that he had two investors who wanted to do a film, and he said, and again I quote, they want to do a private eye film like Casablanca. And I didn't have the heart to tell them that Casablanca has nothing to do with private eyes just because Bogart is in it. But I said, okay. And that's all we said. And he said, you know, come up with a couple of pages of story. So I went home and I wrote, you know, a 10-page story and gave it to him. And he loved it, and the investors loved it, and they loved me, and they wanted me to direct the movie, and they wanted me to be in the movie. What they didn't want to do was pay me.
Of course not.
Of course. They said, you write the screenplay, which is, you know, that's a good 4 or 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
And if we like it, we'll give you X number of dollars. And I said, well, I'll go home and write the story and give it to Universal. What the hell do I need with you?
Right.
So I went home and I started writing the screenplay. And, John, it was a very strange thing. I got about 10 pages in, and some little voice in my ear said, it's a book. Do a book.
Mm.
And so I started writing the book, which was about a Los Angeles PI named Saxon, no first name.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got about 30 pages in, I thought, oh, my God, you should have been doing this all your life. I loved the process of writing a book. Because when you write anything for television or movies, there are people lined up around the block waiting to come in and put their fingerprints all over your script. And when you write a book, it's between the author, the editor, and God. And God is frequently cut out of the loop. So writing a book for all of us is very, very much a personal thing. And I love the idea of doing that because I don't like doing what other people tell me to do. I was thrilled to death that that book, which was called An Infinite Number of Monkeys, won the St. Martin's Press Private Eye Association Award for Best First Private Eye Novel. And they gave me a lot more money than they would have had I just, you know, sent it in over the transom. And that started me off, and, you know, here I am.
Well, heck, you got a lot more than what Hollywood's going to give you for writing the screenplay.
Absolutely. So what, you know, what happened was that, you know, here I am 26 books later, and 24 published, one about to be published, and one almost finished. I intend to continue writing Mylan novels until I can no longer sit up straight at my computer, at my age could be next week or it could be 30 years from now. I don't know.
Oh, God, let's hope it's not next week.
Me too.
Yeah.
I have places to go.
Hey, you still got a lot in you. You got a lot to go out.
I think so. I think that I do. I'm not afraid of not waking up tomorrow morning, but I'm not ready. I have things to do. I have a new grandson. He just turned 2. And I promised my son that I'd stick around at least until he graduates from high school. So that's a while off. And I want to be writing every day because it turns me on. Writing, for most of us who are already good at all, it's an addiction. It's an addiction just like cigarettes or alcohol or drugs or sex or gambling.
Yeah.
And I've got to do it every day. And literally, when I go 2 or 3 days without writing something, I start twitching and I start snarling at people. This is what I love to do. I can't wait to get up in the morning and do it.
Well, you know, speaking of that, I have one of your fans that has asked me a question, wants to know, how old were you when you wrote your first novel?
When I wrote my first novel, I was 46 years old.
46. 47. So, and what that's done, because you don't always just write too, because you also have a radio show, and I want people to know how they can listen to this, because you're on with one of your friends and Hollywood legend Ann Elder, and you host
right.
a radio show called Greenlight Reviews, which is for new movies and favorites and things like that. So now how can people listen to your radio show? When is it on? And, you know, how can
we
get a hold of that?
We were on the radio for a while. Now we're strictly on the internet. Click on greenlightreviews.com, and there's a list of nearly 1,000 movies that we have talked about. And just, you know, click on one and listen to us. Ann Elder is a very funny lady and, of course, very, very bright. And between the two of us, we've just about done everything in Hollywood, you know, movies and television and writing and producing. And she's got a couple of Emmys. And the fact that we're not young kids. We're not in our 20s, obviously. We have such a good time talking about movies from a professional point of view. And I think that's what makes the show so interesting.
And I have another question
Reviews,
that came in. Oh, go ahead.
Greenlightreviews.com.
Another question that came in. Oh, you got me? I know, I think we're having a little bit of technical difficulties on my end. I'm trying to clean that up, so it might be my fault. But I know that I can, everybody... Okay, so a question came in and they want to know, did you have an agent when you wrote your first novel?
No, I didn't. I submitted it to the contest, and when it won, I went to BoucherCon, and I met Dominic Abel, who is an agent, and we talked for a while, and he said, would you be interested in my representing your career? And I said, well, I don't know, I guess so. And he said, well, ask around. And I started asking people like Bob Randisi, who's the founder of the Private Eye Writers of America. And Randisi said, Dominic Abel offered to represent you? My God, take it, because Dominic Abel was and is, 20-some years later, the best mystery agent in the business. So I wrote the book, and it was bought, you know, and contracted. And then he came to me, and he's taken care of me ever since.
So you kind of hit that home run right out of the gate with your agent.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
And VoucherCon, which is coming up here in a week and a half, do you still attend? Do you still go there?
I haven't gone for quite a while. I used to go every year. But frankly, the main reason is the main reason was to sit in the bar all weekend and you know, get together with all my good friends. And I'm not going to name you my good friends because they're all the best mystery writers in the business.
Right.
And we would sit there and drink and laugh and have a good time and, you know, find interesting places to go eat in whatever city we were in. About 11 years ago, I fell in love. And I dragged her to the first VoucherCon, the only VoucherCon we went to together. And, of course, she didn't know anybody. And at the time, she was not a big mystery reader. And really now, she's still not a big mystery reader. She obviously reads me and she edits me before I ever send a book in. You know, I don't think she had a great time. I mean, we had a great time in Milwaukee, but she didn't have a great time at the convention. So I kind of stopped going. But I think there's a very good chance, this is not for sure, but I think there's a very good chance that in 2012, VoucherCon will be held in Cleveland.
Really? So the first time, so out of San Francisco and going to Cleveland in 2 years?
Yes.
And then you're definitely going to go. You're definitely going to go for that.
Well, that's 40 minutes from my house. I don't have to pack anything.
Right.
And, you know, I've already talked to them about it, and I would be really excited about that. Cleveland, despite our lousy baseball team and our lousy football team and what's going to be our lousy basketball team without LeBron,
right.
Cleveland is a terrific city. And people who have never been here, you know, they come in and they say, oh, I didn't want to come here. You're the mistake on the lake. I've heard that.
Yep.
They stick around for 3 days and they love it. They just love it. Usually they don't come in February. That's not a good time to be here, as I'm sure you know.
Not a good time of February.
This might happen.
Especially when you get those snow squalls that come off the lake and it just dumps 14 inches on you and you didn't expect that one. It's not very fun.
You know, years ago I was visiting my son who lived in Los Angeles, and I was going to take a red eye home. So that evening we had dinner in Marina Del Rey, and we sat outside. It was November, but we sat outside. There were, you know, gas heaters out there. We had a terrific time. I got on the plane. I came home, and there were 16 inches of snow in my driveway.
Yep.
The very next morning I thought, what am I doing here? But for the most part, because I don't have to go out, you know, I sit in my house and I write. Maybe 2 or 3 days a year I'll look out the window and say, no, I'm not going out in that. But the rest of the time, you know, you put on an extra layer or something and you just go. And having been born in Chicago, I know all about snow. And frankly, I missed snow and I missed autumn in Los Angeles all those years. So I was very happy to get back.
Right now, well, I'll tell you, in Los Angeles right now, today it was actually 68 degrees and I'm in the valley. So you know that it has to be extremely cold for that to happen in Los Angeles, because, you know, that doesn't happen too often. And, you know, I don't miss snow because I used to live in Minneapolis too. So I saw enough of it. Yeah, I saw enough of snow. So I'm happy I don't have to.
Didn't you have 115 degrees last week in Los Angeles?
We did. Yeah, so it was 115, and now it's dropped down to, you know, 68 degrees. So all I can say is, you know, the doctors are happy because, you know,
everybody's got a cold.
Yeah, the cold season, so. Well, I'll tell you what, Les. I mean, this has been a great interview. I want to thank you so much for coming on. A lot of great information.
Oh, I had a lot of fun.
Everybody, you can go to lesroberts.com. That's lesroberts.com to find out a lot more information. Check out his books, everything that he has going on. And, Les, I want to thank you so much for joining us. And, you know, we'll do this again when you come, you know, when your next novel comes back on.
That sounds great, John. Thanks so much.
All right, you stay warm and you have a good one. Enjoy your winter.
You betcha.
All right. So again, everybody, that was Les Roberts we had on, and that's lesroberts.com. You want to check out all the books that he has in the Milan Jankovic series. Like I said, there are 14 of them, with the latest one that he just had out, King of the Holly Hop, along with his new standalone book that's coming out. So, you know, great that we could have him on. Go ahead right now, and I want to bring in our next guest, because our next guest, we had talked about her book, and we had reviewed it here on the air for you guys, is, you know, Silencing Sam, and we said that this was one that you had to pick up. So now we have the author, and she's going to tell you why you have to pick it up. So, Julie, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. How are you doing?
I am doing great here, John. Thanks for having me.
So, again, Silencing Sam, the new book, it's out. How's it doing? And tell everybody a little bit about what it is, how it's going.
Well, I write a series set in the desperate world of television news. And, you know, media is kind of in a meltdown right now. And newsrooms across America are full of a lot of tension as people try to figure out how things are changing. And in my books, I take people inside of how newsrooms make decisions. And for a lot of people who are used to watching the news, they're finding some, you know, really new things that they had no idea what was going on all behind the scenes. In my latest book, Silencing Sam, that book deals with a fine line between news and gossip and has led to some provocative debate. I'm a journalist turned novelist, and I like to use real topical controversies in my thrillers. And for Silencing Sam, it deals with a gossip columnist who's murdered, and my heroine, TV reporter Riley Sparks, has to secretly investigate the case because she becomes the prime suspect.
Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good. I think I'm having a little technical on my headphones, and I'm trying to get this fixed, so I apologize. But so this is your third book, because your last one was Missing Mark, and then you had Stalking
Susan. Stalking Susan
so,
was the first one.
Right. And then
Missing Mark was the second one.
And now Silencing Sam. So, and you've gotten just fabulous reviews. I mean, you know, I see Tammy Hogan, Vince Flynn talking about it. When you came out here with Stalking Susan, did you know that this was – that you were going to do three books and then possibly more? I'm sure that you're going to, you know, keep going on with this.
Well, I am working on a fourth one now.
Yes, here we go.
But I had no idea. I wrote Stalking Susan just as a book, as a story. I took some inspiration from some cold cases I had covered as a journalist and fictionalized them and added a whole lot of other stuff and came up with a premise of if there were a serial killer targeting women named Susan. And people all want to know what I have against people named Susan, and that's just that. That's what the names of the women in the cold cases were, and I wanted to keep something of them in the story, and so I kept that name. And those who have read the book know that if I had changed it to Murdering Mary, it would have been a totally different story, because right. Susan becomes part of the plot, name origination, famous Susans in history, songs with Susan in the lyrics, and in fact, people named Susan who have read the book have told me that they like it because it makes them feel special, learning all of these interesting things about their name and namesakes. And for Missing Mark, what that does is that deals with how newsrooms decide which missing people get publicity and which ones don't. Because in the world of news and in the world of law enforcement, not all missing people are created equal. And when it comes to children, you know, the media and police have pretty much a routine that we go to. It's when adults go missing that things become a little more tricky, because people are allowed to disappear without telling people where they're going. So absent signs of foul play, missing people cases can be quite difficult, particularly when you're dealing with missing men, because we all know cases of guys who take off and, people are like, he can take care of himself or he'll show up eventually. And there are guys who take off for Vegas and come back a few days later wondering what all the fuss is about. But in my book, I wanted to make it a missing man rather than a missing woman because it would allow me to get into a lot of this stuff with media and law enforcement and people who have vanished.
And so I also, it says here in your bio that, you're from Minneapolis, or you're from the Minnesota-Iowa state line, correct?
Well, I grew up on the Minnesota-Iowa state line, but I've spent most of my life living in the Twin Cities and working for television here in Minneapolis, where I used to run the investigative unit for the local TV station here. And now I do freelance network news producing as stories come up.
And I don't know if you heard when I was on with Les, but we lived in Eden Prairie, which is kind of cool.
Yeah,
so,
neat. And my books are set in Minnesota, so John, they're either going to make you homesick for Minnesota or glad you left. You'll have to read them and decide for yourself.
Yeah, the only ones that I know, the authors that I know that write about Minnesota a lot were John Stanford and Tammy Hoag used to write about Minnesota, and so it's great to know that you're keeping the Minnesota thing alive. And the other thing I wanted to let you know, and this is just way off topic, but it looks like the Vikings might get Randy Moss again. So how do you feel about that?
Well, my husband and sons have fantasy football teams, and they're all very, trying to figure out how that's going to affect their numbers.
I know. I just happened to see that come right before we got him on. It said that the Vikings might get Randy Moss. I'm like, oh, well, how's that going to happen? But, see, you're from Minnesota, so it's great to be able to, kind of converse like that with somebody who's from Minneapolis.
And we have so many excellent mystery thriller writers here in Minnesota.
Yeah.
People always want to know why. What is it about Minnesota that seems to be breeding good books? And a lot of people think, they want to take the easy answer and say, it's those cold winters, that we must all sit inside and write because there's nothing else to do. But I think it's a little deeper than that. I think it's we have so many. When you're living in an area and you're seeing people have success, having books published and being good storytellers, you start to think, maybe I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're living somewhere where no one has ever had a book published, it seems an unattainable goal and it doesn't occur to you to try. But I think it's a self-fulfilling thing. We have so many because we have so many.
Right. Well, the other thing, too, is when we were moving to Minnesota, we came from Ohio and moved to Minnesota, we noticed that, I don't know if there's anything to do with it, but the school systems up there are number one in the country in Minnesota. So you have a lot of very, great schools, very educated people that are in Minnesota. So maybe that has some kind of a translation that goes along the lines of, being, such great, authors.
Well, and whenever you see the list of most literate cities in America, Minneapolis and St. Paul are always very, very near the top or at the top.
Right.
So we have people here who really like to read. In Minnesota, I know bookstores are struggling across the country, but here in Minnesota, I think that we have more, and I think they seem to be doing better than in some other places. And part of that, I think, is because of the very literate population that we have.
Yeah, and like Vince Flynn, who we had interviewed before, he put his books out, and I believe it was in Edina, where he had, said a lot of his things. So, yeah, I think that that's absolutely fascinating and wonderful.
And as I try to, I tend to live my research. Because my novels are set in the world of television news, and that's a world that I know very well, I feel kind of confident writing about that and taking people inside. But right now we're seeing very much a narrowing of the line between news and gossip. And that's because of kind of the anguish that's going on in newsrooms, and ratings decline, and mainstream media has not figured out how to make money from online news. But what we're seeing now is mainstream news organizations are starting to crave that audience that gossip brings. And we're seeing them cover stories they might not have covered before in ways they might not have covered before. And I'm talking about things like Tiger Woods and John Edwards and how those stories have had more staying power than I think that they would have had, you know, a decade ago. And people are talking about gossip now and TMZ TV and the National Enquirer and all that stuff, but gossip is really nothing new. Gossip dates way back to the Bible, and both the Old and New Testament condemn gossips and slanderers. And I try to get into some of that in the book, too. And for this particular book, it really does kind of capture some of the stuff that's going on in newsrooms across the country. Just because we're seeing budgets cut, we're seeing staff cut, and we're seeing newsrooms having to do more with less. And some of the stuff that they end up having to do is stuff that they maybe wouldn't have done had they, you know, had more of a choice.
And, you know, so I changed my headset here, so hopefully I don't go out now so, you know, you guys can hear me better. Is this much better for you?
Sounds good.
Ah, good, good, good. And, you know, the one thing that, you know, you put up on Facebook talking about, you know, you're going to be on Suspense Radio, and I kind of had like a little thing saying, you get to come behind the door number one, door number two. You don't know what's going on. So, you know, I like to kind of, you know, maybe kind of, you know, mention a little bit about like your awards that you had going on. And you're talking, you know, you were in line for the finalist of the 2009 Mary Higgins Clark Award. You also, you know, the 2009 Minnesota Book Award for genre fiction, 2008 Best Mystery, First Mystery for RT Reviewer's Choice Awards. I mean, how does that make you feel, along with, you had others, Anthony Award, Barry Award, Shamus Award for Best Novel, First Novel. How does that make you feel? Does that kind of sit there and you're like, you know, I can, is that, I always forget the word, but, you know, that kind of makes you feel just that much better, like, yes, I know I can do this.
Well, Starving Susan was the first book I wrote, and I didn't have a lot of manuscripts under the bed that I learned from. And there's this feeling in publishing that maybe you have to write a million words before you can write a publishable novel. And I know a lot of people think, well, I must know some shortcut. But I had no shortcut, but I just took a different path. I wrote my million words, but I wrote them in news. And it is very gratifying to, you know, find that when you look in the genre of mysteries and thrillers, that my first novel was recognized as one of the better ones of its year. And that was a real kick for me. And
yeah.
It does give me confidence to continue the series and make me think that I am on the good track.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you come out of the gate and it's just hard enough to just write a book, and then Stalking Susan came out, and I just want to remind everybody that we are talking here with Julie Kramer. I think I've got my technical difficulties fixed. And it's juliekramerbooks.com, and that's KRAMERbooks.com. And she has a wonderful website where you can find out so many information to, you know, about what's going on. And so when Stalking Susan came out, you know, and you started getting all these awards, you just got to be pumped. And it just keeps you going, and now you're on the fourth book of your series, and that's just a wonderful thing.
And, you know, a lot of people wonder about the transitioning from news to fiction, from journalist to novelist.
That was a question that someone asked, and I was going to ask it, but I'm glad you did it already.
Well, at the time I wrote news, I often found myself thinking, darn the facts. If it wasn't for these facts, boy, I could tell a hell of a story. But when I sat down to try and write fiction, I found myself craving the facts, you know, missing the facts. And I found myself thinking that, well, I guess making stuff up felt like cheating. Because after so many years of sticking to the straight and narrow, it was hard to feel free enough to write fiction, and I had to work through some issues. But once I did, I found that news was a good background for fiction. As a journalist, I know how to work on deadline. I'm able to type fast. I write lean and mean. And I have literally interviewed hundreds of people in my life, and most of them on the best or worst days of their lives. And I think that has helped me develop an ear for dialogue, which I know is something that a lot of writers struggle with.
And you're going to be at BoucherCon coming up here in a week and a half. And I
certainly
that you've
will.
Also,
I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, we're going to be there, so it's great we get to meet. And I see that you've also done a couple other events, and you have some after, and they're mainly, and they're all in Minnesota except for one you have in Wisconsin. Do you think that when you're on your fourth book that you might go a little further out on your tours to meet more people?
I've been to Thriller Fest in New York. I've been to Love is Murder in Chicago, Mayhem in the Midlands in Omaha. I've been down the West Coast at a lot of the mystery stores there, from Seattle to San Diego to the Poison Pen and to Houston. I have done some stuff across the country. I feel like my base is sort of the Midwest, but having expanded to other parts of the country, it's fun to find that people elsewhere are reading my books and liking them. In fact, Silencing Sam, my latest book, the subplot deals with wind farms. And I like to deal with very topical things, and I think this is the first time wind farms have been used as a backdrop for a mystery or thriller. And if you've driven around and seen some of those giant turbines, it's kind of like a War of the Worlds thing, and I own some farmland in Iowa that's now become part of a wind farm, so I had some access to the big turbines, and in the book I deal with somebody is bombing wind turbines, and we're not sure, is it terrorists who want to keep America dependent on oil, environmentalists concerned about wildlife, or just people who don't want them in their backyards? And Texas is number one in wind energy. It's Texas, Iowa, California, and Minnesota. And so I've started hearing from people in Texas who've read the books and have been very interested in the wind farm story that I've told.
So I have a question here, too, and I know about wind farms because out by Palm Springs, there's a massive wind farm area that I passed a couple weeks ago, and I couldn't believe when I saw all of that. It's like, my Lord, those things are just massive. So, but a couple questions here that came in from fans of yours on the chat was, they want to know when book number 4 is coming out, because it's always the what have you done for me lately. And then
we
the
don't
other
have an
thing
exact
is,
release date on book number 4, but I'm thinking it's going to be next summer, although we don't have an exact date. I'm thinking probably in a month or so we'll lock into that.
Okay. And then the other question is, what do you feel is your best personal marketing tool for getting yourself out there to your fans and readers?
That is so hard because we know half of all marketing works, we just don't know what half. And I try to do a lot of stuff out there. I've got some book trailers, but I don't know if they sell books. I'm pretty active on Facebook, but I don't know if that sells books. I've got a pretty rocking website. And I speak at a lot of libraries. I do a lot of media because I'm from media. It's something that, I know how to do. But as to which of it is most responsible for success, it's just a little hard to tell.
I would have to think that that's probably an aspiring author that asked that question, and they kind of want to know, what you did to maybe get yourself out there. My answer always is, write a rockin' book.
Right,
and
then you'll
get
reviewed, and then you'll get some buzz.
And then you'll start getting some buzz, absolutely. So, now, one of the other things, because you do have such a great website and fans can contact you through it, what's one of those questions that you've gotten from somebody that was just like, I can't believe I was asked that. That's just like one of the best questions I've ever gotten.
Oh, I get lots
those
of questions.
Those are kind of sticks in your head.
A lot of people want to know how I created my character, my protagonist. And, again, it's a world that I know, and there's a little bit of everybody I've worked with in my books. One of the characters that's sort of popular is, I don't know, she's unpopular, but that's the news director that my heroine works for. And I think the reason that she's kind of a mean boss. And right now with the economy tanking, pretty much everybody out there has either been fired by a mean boss or is working for somebody that they consider a mean boss. So they like to send me a lot of emails suggesting that I kill her off. I think it's something with the economy that people kind of feel a kinship for my protagonist, having not only having to, battle murderers, but, having to work for a bad boss.
And during those emails, do they offer up names, and it might actually be the real name of the real boss that they have? You wonder if that's coming next now. So everybody, email Julie, give them your boss's name, and she might just kill them off in a book, right?
Well, we'll have to see how that all goes, you know. I mean, I don't kill people. My characters kill people.
Right, yes. Your
Lisa
Spodeline
told me that in an interview once that I did with her, and I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some people, you know, like to relate. A lot of people think, and I don't know if this is it, but when, you know, when you're writing a character like, a, you know, like you do and like in your books, people want to know if that is kind of, you know, an offspring of who you are. I think that's one of the biggest questions that I always see on people's website is not only how did you create it, but is this person like you in real life?
Well, there's a little bit of me in my heroine, but there's a little bit of a lot of the people I've worked with in there. And I, what I tell people, because, you know, I incorporate a lot of nonfiction elements, real news stories in there and real locations and real people. So it's kind of a blur. People aren't sure how much is real and how much is not. But what I tend to tell people when they back me in a corner is my books are works of fiction. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Absolutely. So, everybody, it's JulieKramerBooks.com. That's K-R-A-M-E-R. Her latest book is Silencing Sam. This is the third book in her series. You can go back and read Missing Mark, which was number two, and Stalking Susan. Ton of awards. And, Julie, I want to thank you so much for being with us tonight. I mean, the time just flew by, didn't it?
Well, thanks so much for having me, and I look forward to meeting you in person at VoucherCon.
Absolutely, and we're going to stay in touch because we want to know when your next book is coming out so, you know, we can get you back on and talking about book number four and, you know, how things are progressing. So, yeah, and we will definitely see you in about a week and a half.
All right. Thanks so much, John.
And, hey, and thank you again so much for putting up with my technical difficulties. But everyone, I think if everything came through okay, which was good, but I think it was just on my end. So that was
all right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. You have a great night. So, again, everybody, that was Julie Kramer, who we just had on, with her latest book, Silencing Sam, the third book in her TV Reporter Riley Sparks series. Like we mentioned, Missing Mark and Stalking Susan were the first two. Go to JulieKramerBooks.com. Our previous guest we had was Les Roberts talking about his Jankovic book series, and he had book number 14, King of the Hollyhop. That's LesRoberts.com. A couple more news and notes coming up if you didn't hear us at the beginning of the show. Spencer Quinn and T.L. Hines are going to be joining us on Friday, the October the 8th. And if you were on our site, you might notice that coming up on the 12th, that Todd Ritter and Andrew Klavan are scheduled. We just found out today that Andrew is not going to be able to make that date, so we are looking for another guest to replace him. Also, on the October the 15th, we will not have a show. That was going to be for Allison Leota and another guest, but we cannot going to have one because we are going to be at BoucherCon in San Francisco on October the 15th. So we have moved Allison, and we will change this all on our website, to go on October the 19th with Erica Spindler. Homer Hickman is not going to be able to join us on the 19th, so we have moved Allison over to October the 19th. So the 22nd, we're going to have James Rollins and Iris Johansson and Steve Barry and Jeremy Robinson on October the 26th. So, you know, we have a star-studded lineup coming for you again in October, hopefully matching what we just had in September, which was fabulous. On November the 30th, again, I want to announce that we are going to have, you know, Patricia Cornwell is going to be with us here on November the 30th. So, everybody, HauntedComputer.com is Scott Nicholson's 90-day blog tour that he's doing, and I want to remind everybody to go check out HauntedComputer.com. Please send us in, you know, all of your notes and everything that you have going on where we're looking at, you know, fall TV shows or anything that you want coming up. We're still compiling our top 10 list of best books for 2010, so we want people to send in what those books are. You can email us at editor@suspensemagazine.com. You can find us on Facebook. We always have a lot of contests and things that are going up where you can connect with us there to let us know, you know, what authors you're reading. You know, who are we missing? Who do you want to see on? Who do you want us to interview? You know, it's those types of things because, you know, this magazine was created with readers in mind and also helping authors, so we wouldn't be doing it justice if we did not allow, you know, the readers to let us know who you're reading. You know, we want to hear from the fans, so please, you know, let us know. A couple other things is queenwriter.com is where Star Rena has her newsletter going up, quarterly newsletter. She is the author of In the Name of Revenge. You definitely want to go there and sign up for her newsletter. Keep pounding her because right now it's quarterly, but we can get her to change it to monthly if you do keep pounding her. And you always go out and look for In the Name of Revenge, which is on Amazon and, you know, Borders, and going to have it up on Barnes & Noble soon. It's on Smashwords. A great friend of ours, contributor. Another one is Terry Ann Armstrong in Morning Menace. So you want to find that on Amazon, going out to Smashwords and different places for your ebook, along with Scott Fadd and The King of Nod. Those are the three books that we have done through Suspense Publishing. We are accepting submissions if anybody is interested in coming through Suspense Publishing because we are really reaching out to making sure that you are a successful writer, trying to sell your books, trying to get you out there, get you published. Why sit on your manuscript for 4 or 5 years if you already have it done? You know, let us publish it for you. Let us get it out to the people so you can start going. You know, many people right now are doing the ebook route, which is fascinating when you look at all the people that are maybe self-published and are now getting themselves to traditional publishers. I had a conversation with Mark Sadler, the author of Blood on His Hands, another great author out there. You know, he's writing his book. He's looking for a traditional publisher. So it's a very difficult thing right now to get doing is going to those, you know, big traditional house publishers because they're looking for who can we market instead of just is it a great story. It's a very difficult thing. They want somebody with a background that they can market. So definitely want to check all those out. I want to thank everybody here. I know that we had a couple technical difficulties going on. Hopefully everything came through nicely on the air. And, you know, I want to thank everybody. Go to suspensemagazine.com. Check out our latest edition. We have great authors in there this month, and we will be posting as soon as we find out which bookstores and cities are going to be carrying the magazine. We will put that list out and in our newsletter on Facebook so you can run out to the bookstore, buy them all up, sell them out, so then next month, you know, they will order triple, and, you know, we'll just get bigger and bigger, and we'll just get going further along the lines of the United States to making sure that every author has a platform to be able to showcase their work. So until Friday night when you are going to hear Spencer Quinn and T.L. Hines, I want to thank everybody again for joining us tonight on Suspense Radio, and we will see you all on Friday night.